Right, I'm here with Mrs. Mary Tholen. Well, I guess the best place to start is the beginning. Can you just give us a bit on where you were born and raised?
I was born in Rush County, which is about 300 miles southwest of here, mostly west. And I was very, very young, just an infant when we moved to Colorado. And so I spent the first 10 years of my life in Colorado. Then we moved back to Hays, Kansas, and I lived there the rest of my life, 71 years or something like that, until I moved to Kansas City a little over 3 years ago, due to my husband passing away, and my oldest daughter was living here, and she thought I needed to be closer to her.
Okay. And, at what age the faith or religion that you'd profess to be a part of right now is Catholic, correct?
Yes.
So at what age would you say that you were became a member of that?
The day I was baptized, which was about 3 days after I was born.
So lifelong, you've been
lifelong Catholic.
Okay. So obviously your family had a pretty big influence on that. I mean, they brought you up.
Yes,
in it.
Both my mother and father were born and raised Catholics, and from the day they were born, and their parents before them.
Okay.
So it goes back quite a ways.
Quite a ways. Do you know? I mean, where exactly is your family from? Is it a specific country or?
Yes, my father was born in Pyfer, Russia.
Wow. Okay.
And he came to the United States when he was 5 years old with his parents and one sister at the time, but he had more brothers and sisters later on. My mother was born in Rush County and raised there. So her father was one of the first bold Germans to come to Kansas, however.
Oh, okay.
And but my mother was born in Rush County.
Hmm. All right. So your father coming from Russia, was there any specific reason that he came to the United States?
Yes, because he was actually the family. His parents were from Germany. Mm-hmm. We're German heritage. And it was during the lean years, and things were rather difficult in Germany. And Catherine the Great was the reigning monarch, you might say. I don't know what they called her. I wasn't around at that time, but she promised people from Germany all kinds of good things if they would come to Russia. Mm-hmm. That men and boys would not have to serve in the army, and that she would give them all some land to live on, and would make sure that they had jobs and had money to live on, which of course she didn't quite keep all of her promises. Mm-hmm. But they were promised that, and so a lot of them moved from Germany to Russia because of, you might say, the promised land. Mm-hmm. And when that didn't materialize, and they were able, in fact, they had pretty rough going, and when they were able to save enough money, they kind of scraped and lived on practically nothing to save money to come to the United States, because they heard that this was the land to come to. This was the place to make a life. So they saved enough money, a group of them, and they came, left Russia and came to the United States.
Do you know what year that was when they came over here?
Well, my father was born in 1888, mm-hmm. and he was 5 years old. So that would be in 1993 when they came to the United States. 1893. Yeah, I'm not used to this 18 stuff.
That's okay. So he came with his family when he was very young.
Yes, he came with his mother and father, and he had one sister at the time.
Okay.
But then there were other children later on.
So since they were originally from Germany, that's probably where their Catholic heritage would come from.
Oh, yes. Germany was their German. And that's where all the ancestors were. Mm-hmm. But they moved to Russia because of the promises Catherine the Great mm-hmm. made to them or for them, which didn't quite materialize.
Yeah.
And so they decided to come to the United States, where they were told and had heard from, I don't know where they heard it, but that it was where they could make a good living, and that was the place to come to. But they had to save for a long time because they weren't making much money. Catherine the Great didn't quite deliver, and so on her promises, and so it took them a long time to get money together for a family to come over. In fact, my understanding was that their parents helped them a little bit to get out of Russia.
So your great grandparents helped your grandparents.
My parents' parents, which would be my grandparents and their grandparents and my great grandparents. This is getting confusing. grandparents, great grandparents. Yeah, my grandfather, of course, was just a young man because my dad was 5 years old when they came over. So it was my grandfather's parents that helped them financially, and a lot of the other families. There's a group of them that came at the same time, and their families all helped them get to this country.
And do you know where it was that they originally came to, or what afterwards, was there any specific reason that they came to Kansas?
I don't know for sure just where they landed. Wherever they were landing at the time, I don't know. I'm sure that some of the stories my grandfather told us children and my parents told us that we were told, but I don't remember. But they actually settled in Topeka.
Hmm. Okay.
And that was where they traveled, you know, and they didn't want to stay where they landed. I'm going to say probably somewhere in the New York area, but I'm not sure about that.
So
that they traveled then as they could. Took them forever to get here, but they got as far as Topeka and made a home there for many years.
And afterwards, I'm sorry, I forgot the original Rush. Rush County.
He was born in Pfeiffer, Russia, which there's a Pfeiffer, Kansas, but they named some of the towns here after the Volga Germans settled in Kansas. They named a lot of the towns here after the names in Russia and Germany.
But you were born in Rush County.
I was born in Rush County, yes.
Yeah.
But I was only there for a short while until we moved to Colorado.
Oh, okay. So your family then from Topeka to...
From Topeka to Rush County.
Mm-hmm. And then was there any specific reason why they moved there, and then afterwards from Rush County to Colorado?
There were either promises or some information that there was land available, the homesteading and all that sort of thing that was going on at that time. I don't know too much about that. That was before I was born.
Okay.
And my father passed away in 74, so he's been gone a long time, and my mother passed away in 70. So the things, they told us all about it, but the things that I remember are, at my age of 83 now, I don't remember all the things they told me.
That's all right.
But they did move to Rush County, and what took them to that particular place, I think it was because there was land available. I'm pretty sure, because... they lived on a farm to begin with, and sorry.
That's quite all right.
And then from there, well, there was the drought, and there was the Great Depression in the early 30s, and of course that came a little later. But anyway, there was hail, there was the drought, and Grandpa and Grandma kept on farming, but my parents, once they were married, by the time I came along, they decided to move to Colorado, which was there were better opportunities there.
So,
and my father consequently had a ranch in Colorado, and we did very well there.
How long did you stay in Colorado?
Until I was 10 years old.
And then you moved back to Kansas?
I moved back to Kansas because my parents missed the families.
Did they move back to Rush County?
No, we came to Hays, to Ellis County.
Okay. And that was, so you were 10 years old, so that's 1936?
Yes, I was born in 26, so that was 1936. And
so,
the Depression was going on at that time, and the dust storms were terrible.
Yeah.
But we stayed in Hays, and I lived there for the next 71 years.
So you were there for quite a long time then in Hays. Can you tell us a little bit about the religious life or religious communities, Catholic especially, this time?
My parents, like I say, they were from Rush County, and it was a very small community, Liebenthal, in fact. And it still exists, although there's not much left there. It's kind of people have moved away from there, but it's still there. And it was very, the whole community was Catholic. Mm-hmm. And there was a time when, this was rather interesting to me. I don't know how it pertains to the Catholic religion and all that. It really doesn't. But
please.
The church there, instead of, now you don't have to rent a pew that when you go to church, you just go and sit wherever.
Mm-hmm.
But when my parents were growing up and they were first married, you had to rent seats in church.
Hmm.
And that was to raise money to support the church because people were too poor to really support the church. And so by renting the pews,
mm-hmm.
they were able to get enough to support the church. And what was interesting to me as a child, as I heard these stories, was that everybody wanted to sit in back. They didn't want to be too close to the priest up in front. The priests were very strict back then. They
yeah.
were very strict, more so than now. And so the seats in front, the pews in front of the church,
mm-hmm.
you could rent them a whole lot cheaper than you could the ones in the back because everybody wanted to sit in back of the church. So you had to pay more to sit in back of the church.
Hmm.
But that sort of went by the wayside as time went on and things got to be better for the communities.
Mm-hmm.
And
Was this during the late 30s?
Yes, during the Depression years.
That was when they're renting the pew.
Yes, and then when we were in Hayes, I remember as I was a child, I think I was probably about 10 years, 10 to 11, some, when we first moved to mm-hmm. Hayes, the church was badly in need of some funds again. They weren't just getting enough donations from people due to the hard times. And so they charged 10 cents for each person. It was sort of like admission, only they wouldn't call it that. They just, thank you, they just called it that. To get into church, you had to pay a dime.
Huh.
Well, if you forgot your dime as a child, I sometimes left mine on the table at home. I'd run off and forget my dime. They still let you in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't that you had to pay admission. It was just trying to raise funds for the church.
Yeah.
And that didn't work out too well, and so they dropped that. But then the economy started turning around, and things got better, and they didn't have that anymore. But we had one priest in particular. Excuse me, maybe my voice will be better then.
That's quite all right.
I haven't talked to anybody this morning. But anyway, as times got a little better, they did away with all that pew stuff, and they called it a pew rent in the earlier days when my parents were young, and then when I was growing up, that dime was, they were able to do it without that. But we had one priest in particular that was, he was a very good priest and very good at raising money. But he'd have his homilies, Sunday homilies at Mass that were just outstanding, very good, talking about all the things and that you should do and shouldn't do and all the things that were wrong, you know, and all this and that. But he never failed to include in his homily how badly the church needed to be supported. And that got to be quite a topic among the people living in Hayes, that Father Alfred was very good with his homilies, and he got his point across, and we all loved him dearly.
Mm-hmm.
But he always managed to get that little request for money into his homilies every Sunday.
Right. No, that's understandable.
But he was actually the one that, I think he baptized all five of our children.
Hmm.
He was in Hades for quite some time. But he was a good money raiser, and he was a very good priest. People
hmm.
liked him, and he was respected, and they liked him real well. And so he was there for a long time. And I'm quite sure that he was the one that baptized all five of our children.
And this was Father Alfred?
Father Alfred Carney.
Father Alfred Carney.
Oh, he had some letters behind his name, but
mm-hmm.
OFM or something like that, but they all have that, so that wouldn't be anything different, which I don't remember the exact letters, but the Father Alfred Carney.
Mm-hmm.
And then as he got older, he was transferred back to Pennsylvania, which was sort of, you might say, the home place where the Capuchins originated.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some other priests that came, which there was one in particular that was a very, very close, good friend of my husband and myself, and his name was Father Tom Haywood. We just loved that priest. He was. I don't think there was anyone in the parish that did not like him. He was very, very good with services and very good with his homilies and very good with people. But he became ill. He developed cancer and passed away. So we lost him. Mm-hmm. And then we had different ones coming along. But it was enough for me to not ever doubt my Catholic faith and not ever to want to change or anything else. Mm-hmm.
So, and this was through the 40s and 50s and 60s when these different priests...
Yes, my husband and I got married in 1952, and there was a hospital right across in the next block next to the church, and that's where all five of our children were born, and like I said, they were all baptized in that same church, and Joan... Elizabeth's mother actually was married in that church. She and her father were married in that same church that we were married in. And let's see, I don't think any of the other kids were. Dick, the oldest son, he was married in the St. Mary's Catholic Church, which is in Hayes, but it was another parish that they developed after St. Joseph's Parish got too large. Mm-hmm. So he was married in Hayes, but the rest of them married elsewhere.
Can you give us a bit on if you perceived any changes in the Catholic Church during World War II or Korean conflict, Vietnam? How was the Church supportive of these causes? Was it opposed, or did it take a neutral stance?
As close as I can remember, it was more of a neutral stance. Mm-hmm. They weren't opposed to it, but the church is never really in favor. I'm saying that may not be the case, though, because I don't know what they actually felt about. They didn't like wars because it killed our children. Mm-hmm. Our sons had to go to war, and it was dangerous. There's a lot in World War II. There's a lot of our boys that were killed during World War II. My brother was in Germany for 4 years fighting in World War II.
Wow.
And he was shot in the leg at one point, but he wasn't killed. He came home. But they supported the war. But Vietnam War and the Korean Wars, they weren't talked about a whole lot that I recall. That I recall. I was so busy with my five small children at the time and in school activities and things like that, more may have been said about that than I was aware of.
So you mentioned that you've never really doubted your Catholic faith.
No, correct? I have never doubted my Catholic faith. And I wouldn't for any reason I wouldn't think of leaving my Catholic faith, no matter what.
Well, can you speak then on a little bit about not only your interaction with other religious groups or persons, Christian as well as like Methodists or Presbyterians, as well as Buddhists or Jews or Muslims?
I didn't know much about Buddhists, Jews. We had some living in Hayes, and one couple were best friends of ours. Mm-hmm. And they were very strong in their faith, and they talked about it, and we talked about ours, and we were good listeners to each other, mm-hmm. and didn't oppose anything they talked about. Everything was fine. Mm-hmm. Elsa, who was the lady's name, she said if she were ever to go to another faith, it would be the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. But she says, I don't expect to leave my Jewish faith at all. Mm-hmm. But she was very supportive of the Catholic Church. She thought highly of it. What did you ask just before then? What were you?
Well, your interaction with these groups, as well as if you remember anything, interfaith ministries or even conflicts, acts of cooperation, as well as acts of incidents of tension between the Catholic Church and certain other religious groups in Hayes?
There, in the early years of when I was a young girl and first married, there was some conflict between the Catholic Church and what we call the Protestant Church, mm-hmm. churches. There were more than one. And actually, Catholics were not allowed to go to a Protestant church. Mm. It was against our religion to do so, where now you're allowed to do it, no problem at all. Mm-hmm. But I remember I was working at a clinic when I was still in school, but one of the doctors happened to pass away during that time. He developed cancer and he passed away. And the head doctor, the one that owned the clinic, he said we were going to be closing, but we were not to go home. We were closing, but we were closing to go to the funeral, to church services. Mm-hmm. And here I was a Catholic, and I was not allowed to go to a non-Catholic church. Mm. So that kind of put me into a bind, because we were closing, not working that day, to go to the church services for this doctor. Mm. He was, I believe he was a Methodist. Mm-hmm. And yet, we were not allowed to do so. So I went to whoever was the priest at that time, and I think it was still Father Alfred, and I told him what the situation was, and he said, you go to church. You go like you're supposed to go. You don't have to lose your job or make enemies or anything like that. He says, you go to church, but you don't participate in anything. He said, you go and you sit down, and that's it. Mm. So that's what I did. I obeyed my priest. But now you can go and take part in any services that, you know, you can do anything that's going on. Mm-hmm. And there was a time when, if a Catholic boy or girl married a non-Catholic, they were not allowed to be married in the Catholic Church. Mm. It just wasn't allowed. And now that it's allowed, that's been changed completely. When they had the second, what they call the Second Vatican Council, mm-hmm. they changed a lot of those rules, which made it, to me, a lot more sensible. Because mm-hmm. I have nothing against going to another church, participating in their activities, and I have nothing against couples, if there's one non-Catholic and one Catholic, getting married in the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. Now they even allow the minister from the other church to be part of the Catholic ceremony, mm-hmm. if they choose to get married in the Catholic Church.
So speaking of that, prior to Vatican II, which was in the early 60s, do you remember, are there any things that really stuck out in your mind about the Mass or any other things, teachings or certain priests?
Well, the thing that was most important to me during Mass was communion.
Yeah. I was trying to, prior to Vatican II, as compared to after Vatican II, were there things that drastically changed in your mind?
One of the things was the marriage factor. Before that. Mm-hmm. Couldn't get married in the Catholic Church. If you were marrying un-Catholic, you could not get married in the Catholic Church. You just couldn't. And after that, you were allowed to, and you were even allowed, as time went on a little bit, that you were allowed to have a Methodist minister or Presbyterian minister or other ministers from other churches come to the Catholic Church and be part of the ceremony. But this is what they really strongly recommended, that Catholic boys and girls do get married in the Catholic Church. And there was a time, however, when you could not come up into the altar part of the church if you were marrying a Catholic. You had to stay outside what they call the communion railing. Then they had a communion railing, which was right in front of the altar. Mm-hmm. And it was in front of that. And, in the late 1940s and the early 1950s, you didn't even make it that far. You got married, if you married non-Catholic, you got married in the vestibule of the church. The priest would come to the vestibule and marry you. Hmm. When I say marry you, you marry each other, but at that time we called it the priest married us.
Yeah.
But you actually married each other, but the priest would come back to the vestibule. They were not allowed into the body of the church itself. In fact, my husband's oldest sister, when she got married, she married a boy that was not Catholic. I should say a man that was not Catholic. Mm-hmm. And they were married in the vestibule of the church.
Okay. And so that's the vestibule, kind of like an
That's where you enter into the church, like the entryway.
Yeah.
Before you go into the body of the church, where the pews are and where and the altar is way up in front.
It was kind of like
the entryway to the church.
Yeah.
There's nothing there. Just a place where you can hang your coats and.
Yeah, so it's not exactly the sanctuary. It's kind of like
it was not the sanctuary. It was just an entryway to the church.
Okay. And that was pre-Vatican II.
That was, my sister-in-law got married. My sister-in-law got married just prior to her husband having to leave for World War II to go into the army. So that was in the early 1940s.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, hitting on Vatican II again. This was in the community in Hayes, correct? Mm-hmm. How quickly or how drastically were the changes implemented by Vatican II? How quickly were they implemented?
It was implemented rather slowly.
Mm-hmm.
I think so as not to shock the older people in the community, because older people are kind of set in their ways, and when you get to religion, especially. They wanted things. They didn't want things changed. They wanted it left as it was because that's what they had been raised with, and that's what they had all their lives. So they didn't really want it changed.
Yeah.
But the changes came about gradually, and that was the time they also the priest used to face the altar of the church.
Mm-hmm.
The altar was in the very furthest part of the church, and the priest used to face the altar to say Mass. Well, after Vatican II, they had sort of like a table in the sanctuary, and the priest faced the people as they do today.
Mm.
That was, to me, that was the biggest change that I noticed that made the biggest impression on me, that the priest was facing the people, and the Mass was no longer said in Latin, it was said in English.
Mm-hmm.
So we could understand everything, because those of us who did not take Latin in school did not understand Latin when the priest was saying Mass. And so we kind of followed along in our prayer books, our missals, and we did just fine. We didn't object to that. That was our way of life. That's what we were raised with. But when they started facing the people and saying the Mass in English, that was great. That was one of the changes that everybody really liked.
Mm-hmm.
But I have heard some rumors lately, and I hate to call them rumors, I've just heard some people say that the Catholic Church is going back to saying the Mass in Latin. And I don't know whether that's true or not, because I haven't heard it from a priest as such. I've just heard some people in group gatherings saying that, and they do have small portions, I notice, in Sunday Masses at the Eucharist, the Holy Communion part of the Mass where the host is consecrated. There is a little bit of Latin going on there.
Hmm.
So I don't know whether that's what's going to take place, whether they're going to do this slowly, or whether that's something that is just, some people are saying because they're having this little bit of Latin during the Mass. So I don't know about that at all.
So to bring us up to the present then, you're living now in Olathe, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So what church do you belong to currently?
I go to St. Paul's Catholic Church. And my understanding is, I don't know too much about the churches in Kansas City, but my understanding is that St. Paul's is one of the oldest Catholic churches. I don't know whether they mean Kansas City or Olathe, because there's a lot of Catholic churches in Olathe.
Certainly.
There's Prince of Peace and Holy Trinity and a lot of others. So I don't know whether St. Paul's is the oldest Catholic church in Olathe or the oldest Catholic church in Kansas City. But they have been, somebody has donated a beautiful piece of property, land, not too far from here, from where I live, in Stratton Oaks, where they are going to build a new church. And I don't know when. I imagine it depends on how soon they can raise enough money. But that will be a large church with the school. St. Paul's does have a school attached to it now. There's a school with St. Paul's Church.
Mm-hmm.
But the new church will have a school there also.
Mm-hmm.
It's, from what I understand, it'll be a nice, great big church.
Well, since, I won't keep you for much longer, since Vatican II, what are some of the changes since the early 60s? So we've discussed the changes, from the 40s to the 60s. What are some of the changes that you've perceived in the Catholic Church from the 60s up into the present, as far as how the church is composed of certain people, you know, whether the older generations constitute a larger part of the church, or younger generations mm-hmm. are becoming a big part, or are there more emphasis on certain teachings?
I haven't really noticed a big difference. There's a lot of older people, of course. The older people aren't going to change their religion anymore. Some young people mm-hmm. are changing their religions. Mm-hmm. But I would say the church I'm attending, St. Paul's, is a good mix. Mm-hmm. You don't see just a bunch of older people, don't see a bunch of younger people. It's a very good mix. I mean, the way it's, I always remember it to be. I do notice St. Paul's, and here in Kansas City, we have, well, in Hayes, we had mostly Caucasians. Mm-hmm. We didn't, in fact, Hayes was mostly Caucasian. But we have more of a mix in St. Paul's Parish, which I think is good.
And, oh gosh, I had one more question. I forgot what it was. Oh, where do you perceive the Catholic Church to be in the next 10 years?
I can't answer that question except how I feel about it myself.
That's perfectly fine.
I'm at the age where I'm not going out to all these meetings anymore as such. I don't get out there that much. But the way I feel, the Catholic Church is going to become stronger.
I'll probably ask you to say that again after this is done chiming.
Oh.
that's okay.
I could have turned that off.
Oh,
I didn't think about that.
It's fine.
I'll wait until that's finished.
That's fine.
This is just my own thinking, and from what I have perceived as time has gone on, mm-hmm. that I think the Catholic Church is going to become stronger.
Mm-hmm. So even, I mean, not to contradict your...
understand. This is just my own thinking, yeah. And I could be completely wrong.
No, it's fine. But even with, the priest shortages in America and the world over, and certain people feeling that, you know, the church has gone astray from certain teachings and things like that,
mm-hmm.
You still perceive the church as growing within the next decade?
I think it's still going to grow, and I think the priest shortage is going to not be quite as severe as it has been. But we're getting a lot of them from other countries. We're getting quite a number of priests from India.
Mm-hmm.
And, from India is the ones that we have one in our parish right now, and that's why I mentioned that. But mm-hmm. they're coming from a lot of other countries besides just the United States. And I think that is easing the shortage of priests somewhat. However, we do have a great population of aging priests
mm-hmm.
who are retiring and will pass on. And so I don't know just how that's going to work, but I think they're going to figure out something. They're not going to... I don't think the church is going to lose many of its members.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding is, and I think I read that in the paper not too long ago, that... the Catholic Church is the second largest religion in the world. Am I right? Do you know anything?
I would
about
say
that?
They're the largest single, the largest single denomination. Always.
I thought it was the second largest, but maybe it's just the United States. I don't know. I read something in the paper about that not too long ago, but I thought the church was doing quite well in retaining its members.
Well, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I hope it continues to do so naturally.
Mm. Well, aside from that, are there any interesting anecdotes, stories, or persons?
If I could think back far enough and had enough time to think, I could come up with some pretty good stories.
Well, perhaps I'll drop by again and ask you about those. But are there any other? Are there any other characters of note, like Father Alfred or anyone
Father
else?
Tom Haywood was, the whole town loved him, and he died of cancer, like I said, and Father Alfred Carney was there for so many years that he was a fixture of the Catholic Church. We thought he was never going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of us young people growing up, he was just there.
Yeah.
And when he left, we were devastated.
Mm.
We didn't want him to leave, but we had a lot of other good priests come along. We had Father... Gilmary, Father Felix, and There was just a bunch of them. These were true of the later ones, just before I moved, that were there, Father Felix and Father Gilmary. In fact, Father Gilmary is still there. And there's just St. Mary's Parish is what they call secular priests. They're not Capuchins. St. Joseph's Parish is Capuchin priests, strictly Capuchins. And that was, if I can go to a Capuchin parish, that's what I would do. But St. Paul's, unfortunately, is not a Capuchin parish. They do not have Capuchin priests there. But they are just a little bit, I hate to use this description, but a little bit stronger in the Catholic faith, in my mind. Mm-hmm. And that may not be a fact, you know. But the Jesuits and the Capuchins are just a little bit, they don't have, like secular priests, they can inherit from their families, they can inherit money, and they can have money, and in fact, I think they're paid a wage, but I'm not sure about that. Mm. Capuchins, they live on what the parishioners donate, and they can't inherit anything from their parents. If they inherit, the parents want to give something to their son who is a priest, who is a Capuchin, it goes to the Capuchin, whatever you call it. The
fund.
I'm going to say the head office in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which now they have split up the Capuchins. There's one in Denver, Colorado, and one in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, because it was easier to run things that way, I guess, or they were getting too big. I don't know.
Were there any other interesting characters or persons of note among the laity, persons who stood out as particularly strong or zealous in their faith?
Yes, there are always some of those, which I will not speak about.
Oh, okay, all right.
Because there's some that are so very strong, and they almost try to run the church, which the finance committee and the church committee, they do actually help the priests run the churches, because the priests don't have time to do all of these, you know, the bookkeeping and the business end of it and all that. They're there for the faith mainly, I mean, not for the business end of it. And when you have a big parish, like there are a lot of big parishes, there's a lot of business going on too. And yes, we had some very prominent people in the church that I belonged to for the 70-some years that I lived in Hayes, Kansas, that were very prominent in the church and had a lot of say-so in the church. But it all went very well. I mean, they all tried to do what I'm sure in their mind was what was best for the church. Mm-hmm. But I could name some names, but I won't do that. Some of them may still be alive.
Yeah, well, we're not asking you. We're not trying to incriminate you. Is there anything else that you feel needs to be spoken about your personal history or about your religious background?
My personal history is pretty humdrum. I mean, I was born and raised a Catholic. I've been a Catholic all my life. And I love the Catholic Church. I love my faith. And I think most of their traditions are just absolutely great. Mm-hmm. I think I do not, however, think like some of the old, I'm going to say the old-timer Catholics, which I'm an old-timer now at my age, but ones that were older than I, they thought if you weren't a Catholic, you would go to hell. You know? Yes, but I'm sure you've heard of that. If you're not a Catholic, you can't be saved.
Certainly.
Well, that is not true, and I don't believe that at all. That is something that I have never gone along with, because we all have the same God.
Well, all right. Well, thank you very much. I'm sorry, did you have something else?
No, I think I'll stop there.
Okay. it's a very optimistic note to end on. So. All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Tholen.
Thank you.